You are listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at opensocietyfoundations.org.
Hello to everybody and welcome to this event about LGBT rights situation in Central and Eastern Europe, with a particular focus on countries in former USSR. We have a pool of three amazing, inspiring activists from the region, from Russia, Ukraine, and Georgia. We'll hear from them three presentations, which will take about 40 to 45 minutes, and then we'll open the floor for discussions and questions that you may have to them. We also have interpretation, and Igor from Russia, from the Russian LGBT Network, will be using interpretation services, and when he makes his presentation, it will be translated consecutively. As you know, maybe some of you, LGBT rights situation in former USSR has been experiencing a backlash over the last 3 to 5 years. This backlash takes form of legislative proposals and legislation passed that prohibits the so-called propaganda of homosexuality to minors. Russia was the pioneer of such legislation, having passed the first piece legislation at the regional level in the city of Ryazan about 6 years ago. And as we heard this year, this legislation was also passed at the federal level. Similar laws are discussed across the region and in some cases passed. In Moldova, there is a series of ordinances that have been passed at the local and regional level that declare villages and cities across the country as the so-called gay-free zone, and which also ban organization of any public events. In Ukraine, legislators want to go even further and not only to introduce administrative but also criminal punishment for the so-called propaganda of homosexuality with terms of imprisonment of up to 5 or 7 years. Similar legislation has also been discussed in Lithuania, and over the last few months we heard statements from politicians in Armenia, in Azerbaijan, in Kyrgyzstan, in Kazakhstan, and a number of other countries. So this backlash, this legislative backlash, is obviously very serious. Apart from that, we can see that the church, the Russian Orthodox Church in particular, is taking a very active stance against LGBTI rights. We also see an emergence of so-called family values coalitions that stage anti-LGBT protests throughout the countries in the former Soviet Union bloc. We also see that the environment in which LGBTI human rights defenders work is becoming more and more dangerous. And it is a very dangerous exercise to organize a public event in support of LGBTI rights pretty much anywhere in the former USSR. OSF supports work of courageous activists throughout the region, including in Russia, the Russian LGBT Network coming out, and a number of other LGBTI rights groups. In Ukraine, our foundation, the Renaissance Foundation, supports the efforts of the Anti-Discrimination Coalition, which is a civil society coalition which advocates and pushes for adoption of the anti-discrimination legislation in Ukraine, which is inclusive of sexual orientation and gender identity. And we also support LGBTI rights efforts in Georgia, where the situation is a little better. But how much better, we're going to find out from the presentation from Anna, who is the policy director and the director of the community center of the LGBT rights organization called Idin Toba. And it is Anna that I give the floor to first. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I would love to give you a brief presentation to give you an overview of what's going on in the country. I'll first introduce myself, I'll give you a little bit of context of what's going on in Georgia, and I'll talk more specifically about the possibilities of the Russian, similar to Russia, laws that might be introduced to parliament pretty soon. And I'll also introduce you with my vision of what LGBT activists and organizations need to do next in Georgia to, you know, prevent similar processes that are going on in Russia. So my name is Anna Rakhvishvili. I'm a community center of Idin Toba. Idin Toba is an LGBT organization which was established 3 years ago in Georgia. We started up as a small community organization. We were really small. We did a lot of community services, and we really managed to gather a lot of LGBT people who were ready to fight for their rights for over these 3 years. And next thing we started to do was to, you know, starting doing advocacy with other human rights organizations, the government. And that's pretty much what we're doing now. But with the emergence, what we managed to do was to, you know, give certain publicity to LGBT issues and public discourse. Because before, all the issues would be muted, like nobody would talk about LGBT issues at all in Georgian context. The visibility grew, but with the growth of LGBT visibility, the backlash also grew a lot. And I think it's not only backlash to LGBT issues per se, but it's also a tendency of growing nationalism in countries like Georgia, which is very much an echo of what's going on in Russia. So we have a church that really got strengthened over the past few years with a lot of governmental money and with a lot of public support. And the church, who now tries to, you know, reclaim its power by picking up the issues that are especially sensitive for the society. And that's what happened on May 17th this year. I think that was a pretty good illustration of the point, because on May 17th, we planned a rally on International Day Against Homophobia and Transphobia. Around 200, 300 people were supposed to come at the rally. The rally was really, really moderate. We tried only to have anti-discrimination posters, like nothing positive or proactive, just like reactive sort of, you know, messages. However, simultaneously, church was able to mobilize over 40,000 people in the streets of Tbilisi to violently attack us. And there was a violent, you know, attack on the plant rally. However, the police was somehow well mobilized to take all the activists away, but not mobilized at all to keep the counter protesters away from us. So the injuries were not so, physical injuries were not so bad. However, the trauma and also this like demonstration of such public violence was, I think, was the first incident of what happened in the country, that happened in the country on that issue. But this incident sparked a lot of public discussion on LGBT issues, which has, you know, some positive and some negative effects. The positive effects are that the government started to openly, at least on a verbal level, openly support LGBT rights, some of LGBT rights. Like the prime minister said, for example, that everyone has the right to assembly, which is a good thing. The other thing, which I think you're all interested in, is that many opposition parties rallied with the church and they started to agitate. They started to get societal support by advocating for anti-gay propaganda laws or even, how is that? Like, there is one marginal party that is now going around the country. It's very well organized also, like how they're set up, and they're collecting signatures to initiate a constitutional change that would define marriage clearly between men and women. And they say that this is a preventive mechanism so that in 20 years, nobody in Georgia would ask for gay marriage. And this is totally absurd. But what it indicates is that these parties try to get political power by, you know, manipulating with the issue. Other than that, some of the initiative groups very openly speak about gay propaganda too. And the problem with that is that this idea of gay propaganda somehow is very well, the arguments that support anti-gay propaganda laws prepared by the Russian church, by the way, and then copied by the Georgian actors, are very appealing to the majority of the people who say that we're against violence, so that violence is not acceptable for people. However, you know, don't impose your values on me sort of appeals to most of the people. And that's the scary part. And the scary part there is also the government's reaction to it. Because after May 17, many of the parliamentarians who are in the majority now, they also sort of voiced similar arguments. However, with a lot of international pressure, they had to stop. But if these such laws get introduced to the parliament, I'm still not sure how it would work. So there is some tension. Also, what also sort of hints to spark of newer problems is that the government's response to the May 17th was not quite adequate. What they did is that they basically did not really execute anybody who organized the violent rally in the streets of Tbilisi, and these people basically attacked police. They literally, they violated public order the whole day. But the government didn't really respond to it. Two people were given 50 euro fines, administrative fines, and two priests were taken to the court, and one of them was already released for insufficient evidence. So that pretty much indicates the political will of, you know, fighting what's happening in the country. The scary part there is also that the church really has a lot of power, and to me it seems that the government is actually afraid of the church, because after the rally, the messages from the church were not directed at LGBT activists at all. The church was addressing the government. They said, we gathered thousands, we can gather millions, elections are coming, you know, you look after what you say. So it was really not about us anymore. And then the government turned out to be weak in the situation. Really, you know, scares me a lot. That's one thing. The other thing is that what we can do with it, and I'll try to be brief and sum up to give others the space. How much time I have left? If you know. Okay, thank you. So what I see we needs to be done is first to, because Georgia has a very anti-Russian attitude, and Georgian people have very, very anti-Russian attitude. So I think one strategic direction of our work would be to, you know, expose Georgian church as copying Russian church and government's agenda. That would be strong enough argument against everybody who agitates for anti-gay propaganda laws. So I think that will be one part of our work. Other thing is mobilizing civil society to, you know, have larger voice when we try to advocate for something. Because before, most of the human rights actors in the country, they wouldn't want to cooperate with us, you know. We would work together, we would write a statement, they would publish a statement without our name on it. But like now, I think after May 17, some of the actors became more proactive because it became very visible that it's not only about us. It's about the power of a traditional force that can, you know, like, target anybody at any time. I think a lot of direct work with the government is needed to be done. We will try to advocate for specific policies in education and like health system so that the government is sensitized towards LGBT discrimination and also becomes proactive. Because at this moment, most of the government representatives think that if they say they're not discriminating against LGBT people or they're not homophobic, it's enough. They think that this is achievement in itself and nothing else needs to be done because we're not homophobic. Hey, you know, look at us. So I think it's very important to start working, proactive work with the government. And the first step is also working with the police, because also after May 17th, the hate crime rate was like unbelievable. The office was full of people being like beaten up on their skin and kicked. And like, kicked between the legs and whatever. It was really awful. So police needs to, you know, have the skills to react on it. And the other thing is that working individually with the parliamentarians that are more or less open-minded. Because there are quite a few, but they're always scared to, you know, openly state their opinion. So what I see as important is to empower those liberal-minded parliamentarians to speak up their minds when it's necessary. And, you know, like to develop, again, discursive arguments that would make sense for them and that would appeal to wider public too, because that's the, like, that's the key issue here. Thank you very much for your attention. If you will have any questions, I'll be glad to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. It reminds me that a few years ago, in internal activist discussions, and someone would say that this would be happening in Georgia, probably people would say that, you know, they did not see that coming, as we probably did not see the anti-propaganda laws coming in Ukraine. And I also remember very vividly the discussions in Russia when the anti-propaganda law was introduced in St. Petersburg, and the activists were saying, no way, no way they're going to do it just before the presidential elections, and yet they did. So there was no way this was going to happen in Ukraine, and yet it's happening. And there are two things happening at the same time. On the one hand, there are a few versions of the anti-propaganda law that offer various degrees of punishment for the so-called propaganda. On the other hand, there is also a very active discussion under the pressure from the European Union of a comprehensive anti-discrimination bill, which could be inclusive of sexual orientation if it is amended. So about these two pieces of legislation and the work that is happening in Ukraine, we'll hear from Taras Karasichuk, who is also the leader of Kyiv Pride.
Yes. First of all, it's a pleasure for me to be here, and a little bit shortly about the situation in Ukraine. I think that the first discussion about the anti-propaganda law in Ukraine was in 2007, when some NGO, Law Contra Homosexualism, began to gather signature. And in 2 years, I think, they submit to our government around 100,000 signs. So the first reason to appear such anti-propaganda law was pressures from homophobic movement, which is very strong in Ukraine. And during this year also, this homophobic movement implement a lot of public information campaign against homosexuality, and they just prepared such a base for the current for this current situation, because right now I think that in all spheres, in political level and in social level, the situation very dangerous and very homophobic. As Maxim already said, we have in our parliament two different anti-propaganda law. First is like relatives of very well-known Bill 8711, which was submitted to our parliament. Yes, in the previous session, which was adopted in the first reading. This bill doesn't recognize good. What does it mean? Propaganda and punishment, they are just administrative. But next bill, 1122, he is more dangerous because, as already was said, that the punishment which is mentioned in this law has also criminal ответственность. Yeah, criminal responsibility till 7 years. for propaganda of homosexualism. But I believe, and we believe that such a bill will not be adopted because Ukraine right now has very strong discussion with European Union. In November, maybe we'll be signed some association agreement with European Union. In Ukraine, we have just now two different processes. First is moving toward signing the association agreement, and second is visa liberalization. Yes, visa liberalization movement. And I think, one of a very important point to continue this visa liberalization process is to adopt a comprehensive anti-discrimination law. Several months ago, in parliament was submitted, created by our government, a bill of comprehensive anti-discrimination law, in which sexual orientation mentioned only in labor code. And as I know, as we spoke European Union mission in Kyiv, that in Ukraine, that it wasn't enough for European Union that sexual orientation was mentioned only in labor code, because there was some requirement from European Union side that the sexual orientation must be mentioned in the основные. Yes, in the basic notions, not only in the labor code. But right now we have, and right now this labor code, this anti-discrimination law, are discussing very, I don't know, усиленно. And discussing very, very, very intensively. As I know that our parliament postponed this bill, and they just try to find some possibility not to adopt, not to pass such a bill. And it was a very, very bad surprise for me, because we just have in our parliament one a little bit liberal political power. It's party of Klitschko, party Udar, and they said that in principle they will support such anti-discrimination law, but after submitting to this party some request once more again, will you support such a bill, they answered that we will support this anti-discrimination law only in case when only without mentioned of LGBT sexual orientation. So right now we have no deputy, we have no power in our parliament which supports such a law. I think our government is more not liberal. It's a little bit better in case of LGBT, right? Because we have some a good example of cooperation with our government is holding a Kyiv Pride. It means March this year it was first ever game gay pride, and we had a lot of and it was successful because for 100 participants was around several thousand policemen, and the protection was organized good enough. What's happened in the future, I just cannot imagine, because the situation right now, it's very difficult because we have tremendous pressure from Russia side. We have a very huge informational campaign against European integration. The number of people which don't support European integration increase, and the situation become worse. And in general, as I see that our civil society movement and pro-European part, of our society, cannot give good response to such a huge and good organized anti-European and homophobic movement. Okay, I think it's all. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Taras. And I guess the next speaker is Igor, and he'll tell us more about the situation in Russia. And I would be curious, Igor, also to hear your opinion about how much Russia is involved in pushing for some of this legislation in other countries in former USSR, and answers to some of the traditional Russian questions: what to do and who is responsible. Что делать и кто виноват?
Добрый день. На самом деле Максим в своей презентации в начале встречи все рассказал о том, что происходит в России. Я могу просто поесть.
Good day. Hello. In fact, Максим already told you everything that is happening in Russia that made it possible for me to eat.
Но это я все равно скажу, я, презентация Максима позволит мне больше сосредоточиться на контексте, на том, почему происходит сейчас то, что происходит.
But I will tell you anyway, and the presentation by Максим will allow me to concentrate more on the context. I will tell you what's happening and why it's happening.
Действительно, еще несколько лет назад мы представить себе не могли, что у нас будут приниматься законы о запрете пропаганды гомосексуальности, что вопрос, вообще вопрос о сексуальной ориентации, вопрос об ЛГБТ в России станет чуть ли не главным политическим вопросом, который сегодня обсуждают на первых полосах всех газет.
As recently as a few years ago, we couldn't even imagine that the law on sexual, the law on homosexual propaganda will be passed in our country, and that the issue of sexual orientation and similar issues of LGBT community will be discussed on the first pages of all national newspapers.
Российские власти до 2011 года не относились к вопросу прав ЛГБТ никак. То есть они просто игнорировали этот вопрос как внутри страны, так и на международном уровне.
Until 2011, Russian authorities didn't really talk about the issues of LGBT at all. It was completely silenced from the public discourse.
Да. И нас скорее беспокоило как раз то, что они ничего не делали, да, то есть они не не занимались проблемами дискриминации, не занимались проблемами антидискриминационного законодательства и даже просто не отвечали на наши обращения. То есть они делали вид, что там ЛГБТ-организаций просто не существует.
That was on both national and international level, and we were concerned with the fact that they were not really tackling any of the problems of discrimination or anti-discrimination laws and so on. And they just ignored us, which was a serious cause of concern to us because they showed to the world that we just don't exist. Mm-hmm.
Общий уровень гомофобии населения был достаточно высок, как показывали опросы общественного мнения, но он никак не проявлялся в публичном пространстве.
The general level of homophobia in Russian society was pretty high, but it was not shown in any way in the public discourse, so it was never discussed.
И надо заметить, что уровень гомофобии на протяжении, в долгосрочной ретроспективе, после распада Советского Союза достаточно заметно снижался. Например, если в начале 90-х годов примерно 30% населения, взрослого населения России говорили о том, что геев нужно сажать и уничтожать, то сегодня таких людей меньше 10%.
After the collapse of the Soviet Union, the level of homophobia has been steadily falling. For example, in the early 90s, according to public opinion investigation polls, the 30% of the population was ready to support prison punishment for homosexuality, and presently this level fell to 10%.
И неожиданно, ну не то чтобы неожиданно, но вдруг резко в конце 2011 года все изменяется. Принимаются в одном регионе за другим законы о запрете пропаганды, начинается достаточно активная и агрессивная информационная кампания в федеральных СМИ, контролируемых государством, где геев обвиняют в том, что они виноваты в демографическом кризисе, в том, что они совращают детей и в том, что они вообще агенты Запада, так скажем, являются потенциально опасными людьми в России.
So since 2011, everything changed, and we are dealing with a very aggressive stance on the part of the government against the gay LGBT community in general, and all the media controlled by the government are attacking the community, are accusing gay people of all the evils and trying to hurt children, the minors, and destroy Russia.
То же самое, такая же резкая перемена происходит не только внутри страны, но и во внешней политике России. Россия начинает на уровне Организации Объединенных Наций, на уровне Совета Европы активно продвигать идеологию традиционных ценностей.
The same is happening in the international arena with Russia. Russia is trying to promote the ideology of the traditional values, so-called traditional values.
И как это не смешно, но главной традиционной ценностью для России оказывается именно гетеросексуальность почему-то.
And however it may seem strange, but the main the traditional value that is being promoted by the Russian government in the international arena and the UN and so on is it seems to be the heterosexuality.
Вот здесь как раз и заключается причина того, почему Россия инициирует и поддерживает принятие, внесение подобного рода законопроектов в соседних странах. По сути, критика Запада за его либеральное и толерантное отношение к гомосексуальности, за его антидискриминационное законодательство, за легализацию однополых браков, становится аргументом для того, чтобы собрать вокруг себя некие антизападные силы, да, и сформировать некую коалицию, которая позволит, так скажем, России чувствовать себя более уверенно при решении других вопросов в дискуссии с западными странами.
So, This is why Russia is trying to promote this kind of approach, a legal approach to these issues on the international arena, and trying to influence the countries, neighboring countries, and create a coalition of countries that will display the same anti-Western sentiments by criticizing Western anti-discrimination laws, legalization of same-sex marriage. They are trying to gather a coalition of countries that would stand by Russia in defending the so-called traditional values.
Возникает вопрос, а почему все это произошло именно в конце 2011 года?
And the question is why all of this happened toward the end of 2011.
Во-первых, начинается новый цикл именно в конце 2011 года, начинается избирательная кампания. Сначала в Государственную Думу, в очень важные региональные парламенты, например, в парламент Петербурга, и президентская избирательная кампания.
First of all, the campaign for Duma and local legislation and the presidential campaign has began at that particular time.
И впервые правящая партия «Единая Россия» ощутила, что ее позиции значительно ослабли. Не случайно такой первый громкий закон о запрете пропаганды был принят в Петербурге, потому что там у «Единой России» как раз к ноябрю 2011 года, судя по опросам, были очень плохие шансы.
And first, what happened is that the Russian ruling party, Единая Россия, the United Russia, has felt that it's losing its support.
Я сказал, что в Петербурге еще были очень плохие шансы, и поэтому именно в Петербурге был принят первый закон.
Because they had very little chances to pass any legislation, local legislation in the St. Petersburg. To win elections in St. Petersburg, that's why they pushed this legislation.
И после парламентских выборов в декабре 2011 года, после фальсификации парламентских выборов, случились массовые беспорядки в Москве и в Петербурге. И, в общем-то, волна протестов, волна недовольства вообще общей ситуации, то есть она не спадала, в общем-то, до конца 2012 года.
And as a result, at the end of in December of 2011, there were riots and protests around the country, and the wave of protests actually continued until the end of 2012.
И поскольку для российских властей это было полной неожиданностью, у них возникла некая мания, да, мания потери контроля, когда они стали понимать, что они теряют контроль над ситуацией, и понимали, что что-то надо делать очень быстро. От этого решения, которые они принимали, были не очень продуманы и зачастую носили такой нерациональный характер абсолютно.
This caused a great fear, which can be described as a complex of losing control among the Russian authorities, and which resulted in various very poorly thought reactions and actions on the part of the government.
Власть пыталась сейчас сплотить себя вообще вокруг себя всех, кого только можно, в том числе наименее ресурсные группы, малообразованные, социально униженные. Вот в этих группах как раз очень высокий уровень гомофобии, и, так скажем, геи, лесбиянки являются очень удобным врагом, да, на которого можно натравить вот эту вот социально обиженную, социально униженную часть общества.
So they, as a result, the Russian authorities are trying to unite around their own causes and their own vision the lowest levels of the society, the least educated and most socially disadvantaged and economically disadvantaged. And among those groups, the level of homophobia is the highest. Therefore, the situation becomes more dangerous.
С другой стороны, российские власти стали очень нервно относиться к любой гражданской активности, к любому публичному выражению мнения, не совпадающему с официальным мнением.
And the authorities are very nervous about any public discussions or expression of opinions that are not along the lines of the official opinions, and they're trying to suppress it any way they can.
Вы, может быть, уже слышали о целой серии законов, которые принимаются на протяжении 2012 года, которые ограничивают свободу собраний, вводя драконовские штрафы за нарушение законодательства о проведении митингов, шествий, пикетов. Закон об иностранных агентах, когда любое, так скажем, любая деятельность, которая вызывает, любая деятельность неправительственной организации, которая вызывает у властей подозрения, может быть объявлена вражеской деятельностью, да, вам присваивают звание иностранного агента, что в русском языке фактически является синонимом слова враг.
You may know about the series of legislative measures taken passed during 2012 that are aimed at limiting the various civil liberties, like the freedom to assembly and freedom of expression. They also are against any free activities of NGOs, and that is why they created this special category of foreign agent in the legal system that will put an responsibility on those organizations that are funded by through foreign sources to declare themselves foreign agents. That has a very negative connotation in the Russian system. It sounds like the enemy of the people.
И, между прочим, одними из первых жертв этого нового закона, Максим уже об этом говорил, стали именно ЛГБТ-организации, потому что наша позиция, она, ну, по определению не совпадает с идеологией традиционных ценностей, мы не можем в нее вписаться. И поэтому, конечно, именно деятельность ЛГБТ-организации, активность ЛГБТ-организации очень высокая, которая наблюдалась в последние годы, она вызывает у властей наибольшее подозрение и наибольшее раздражение.
The first victim of this draconian law, of course, is the LGBT movement and all the organizations that are representing it, because it does not in any way coincide with the ideas of that of traditional values that the Russian authorities are trying to promote.
Наконец, известные законы о запрете гей-пропаганды, они преследуют ту же самую цель, да? Ну, двойную цель. С одной стороны, убедить общество в том, что вот эта самая гей-пропаганда очень опасна, и что над Россией нависла просто угроза, так скажем, гомосексуальной революции, которую власть пытается предотвратить.
So the second, the most annoying to the Russian government is any activity on the part of a gay community, and that's why they passed this gay propaganda law, which puts two main goals in front of this before the government. One is to divert the threat of gay revolution in the country and the decay of the of Russia.
И другая цель заключается в том, чтобы получить еще один инструмент контроля и инструмент репрессий по отношению к ЛГБТ-организациям, потому что, естественно, любая наша публикация, любое наше публичное высказывание может при желании рассматриваться как та самая гей-пропаганда. И всегда замечательный аргумент, который часто используют против нас, когда мы говорим, что мы же даже не к детям обращаемся. А нам говорят, а вот тут могли быть дети.
So, the second is a tool of control and repression that they very eagerly use. They basically, based on this legislation, can forbid us from any public expression. Because no matter what we say, they can say, oh yeah, children can be here, and it's very harmful to them.
Чтобы было понятно, насколько это может быть действенный инструмент репрессии, я скажу, что за нарушение этого закона для организации, именно для юридических лиц, предусмотрен штраф до 1 миллиона рублей.
And how effective this tool is, I would like to illustrate by the simple fact that it envisions a punishment, a penalty of 1 million rubles for violating this law.
Для многих некоммерческих организаций, неправительственных организаций в России, изъятие такой суммы из бюджета может означать прекращение деятельности.
To many of the NGOs in Russia, the penalty of this scale means effectively the end of their operations.
С другой стороны, принятие законов о запрете пропаганды имело и косвенное, но не менее серьезные последствия в виде роста насилия в отношении ЛГБТ.
On the other hand, the passing of this anti-propaganda law had indirect but very serious results in the increased violence against the LGBT community.
Мы наблюдаем на протяжении всего 2012 года активизацию разного рода радикальных групп, в том числе и неонацистских групп, которые не скрывают, скажем, свои неонацистские взгляды.
We've observed a great intensification of various actions by neo-Nazi groups and various radical groups, homophobic groups, and those groups do not even try to cover their real ideology and purpose.
Потому что власти своей гомофобной информационной кампании фактически выдали им разрешение, да, легитимизировали их гомофобию, и, по сути дела, именно гомофобия превратилась в легальное основание для насилия.
Because the authorities, in effect, through that legislation, encouraged and legitimized their actions. It became a call for, in a way, a call for violence against our groups.
Гомофобное насилие, естественно, в России мы наблюдали всегда, но важное отличие того, что происходит сегодня, это то, что это насилие организованное. Эти группы хорошо организованы в рамках всей страны, они координируются через интернет. Это насилие имеет свою цель не просто нападение на отдельных людей, его цель запугать целое сообщество и запугать, в общем-то, все общество, потому что они нападают на людей, они издеваются над ними, они снимают все это на видео, выкладывают в интернет и всячески распространяют, так скажем, это видео.
The purpose of those, the difference between homophobia that existed before, because we've dealt with this basically throughout the time immemorial, but in present time, through the government actions and legislative acts, which became actually a carte blanche for all those organizations to use violence against our community, the entire community, and use it in a very organized way, not as a single instances, but very organized way, and they do it through attacks that are then videotaped and put on the internet with the purpose of threatening the entire community.
Полиция не возбуждает уголовных дел по этим фактам.
The police doesn't bring any actions against the perpetrators of those acts. It doesn't investigate even.
И это тоже не случайно, потому что и президент Путин, и министр иностранных дел Лавров неоднократно публично заявляли, что в России у геев проблем нет.
And it's not an incidental thing, because both President Putin and the foreign minister Lavrov have declared on many occasions that Russia doesn't have any problems, and the gay people in Russia don't have any problems.
И да, если сейчас полиция вдруг начнет хорошо работать и будет возбуждать дела по тем, по крайней мере, десяткам случаев, которые нам известны, то это будет очень серьезным опровержением слов политических лидеров.
And if the police started investigating and prosecuting those acts of violence, it would actually contradict the declarations by President Putin and Minister Lavrov.
Потому что, и поэтому они этого не делают. У них есть фактически разрешение не обращать внимания на подобного рода преступления.
That's why they don't do it. The police doesn't respond to acts of violence against gay people because they have a, in fact, effective tool of legislative tool that allows them to ignore this kind of violence.
На этом я закончу. Думаю, что я еще смогу что-то добавить, отвечая на ваши вопросы.
At this time, I would like to stop my brief presentation, and I will be glad to add to whatever you would like to hear during the session of questions and answers.
And this would be the good time to ask to our respected panelists some of the questions that you may have as you were hearing their presentations. I will use the opportunity to ask the very first one, abuse my facilitator role, but we would collect a few questions from the audience as well and ask our panelists to answer them too. So my question to you, Igor, first would be maybe the more obvious one, and I know that you've been discussing over the last 2-3 weeks that you're here in the States a lot, the campaign that has been mounted about boycott of Sochi Olympics. I wonder what you think about it, whether boycott could be an effective tactic or strategy in terms of repealing the anti-propaganda laws and maybe the foreign agents laws, the overall crackdown on civil society. Mm-hmm. And if not, what do you think can be some of the other effective strategies in terms of international solidarity and support? Mm-hmm.
So I'm Emily Martinez from the Open Society Foundations. I have a somewhat related question, I think, which is, do you think there's been some advocacy efforts that have really singled out the LGBTI rights issues, particularly in Russia, as attacks against the LGBTI community. Do you think that's a more effective approach, or do you see grounding some of the attacks we see on the LGBTI community in the overall attacks against civil society in Russia as a more effective advocacy strategy? Because I do wonder sometimes that it's convenient for the authorities to kind of keep the LGBTI rights issues separate from the issues affecting the rest of civil society in countries. And I'm curious to what extent that plays out also in Georgia and Ukraine, to the extent that the particular attacks against the LGBT community are similar to attacks others in civil society are experiencing, and how useful it is to be trying to build those coalitions with other civil society groups.
I have a technical question for any of the panelists on around enforcing the administrative sanctions in the propaganda law in Russia and any other laws that are being contemplated. I don't remember specifically. It seemed like in the Russia propaganda law, you mentioned a fine, Igor. I may have misread or I'm misremembering, but I thought there was also jail time as a sanction. But in any regard, who actually is enforcing the sanctions? Are investigations being conducted by law enforcement authorities, and or is it happening at the municipal level?
Сочи.
Я начну с Сочи. Дело в том, что если бы тактика бойкота Сочи увенчалась успехом, то те, кто сегодня в России придумывает законы о запрете пропаганды, о, об иностранных агентах, были бы только рады.
I think that if the tactic of actually implementing the boycott of Sochi Olympic Games were to be successful, those people in Russia that actually come up with those new laws, anti-propaganda laws and anti-LGBT laws, would be more than satisfied with such a solution.
Потому что для них это был бы еще один аргумент, который они могли предъявить обществу. Вот посмотрите, этот зловредный Запад срывает нашу замечательную Олимпиаду на зло России, а ему помогают эти противные геи, которые тоже являются внутренними врагами.
Because that would open to them a possibility of using a very simple argument that, look, this malicious West is breaking the Olympic Games and is helped by those revolting gays.
И поэтому, на наш взгляд, лучшей тактикой является как раз использование Олимпиады как большой информационной площадки, с помощью, через которую можно говорить и с российским обществом, и с мировым сообществом о тех проблемах, которые происходят в России. Говорить разными средствами, там, символическими или напрямую, и, ну, это уже вопрос тактики.
In my opinion, having the Olympic Games gives us an international platform to have a dialogue and that will allow us to talk about issues in Russia in various ways, symbolically and directly.
И на самом деле, хотя публично российские лидеры всячески демонстрируют, что им безразлично мнение западных лидеров, например, по поводу ситуации прав человека. Они постоянно говорят, что это наше внутреннее дело, вы в него не вмешиваетесь. Но на самом деле для них это очень важно. Их критика, так скажем, раздражает. И важно, чтобы эта критика продолжалась при любом удобном случае. Потому что, как минимум, это гарантия того, что они, по крайней мере, будут осторожнее в своей дальнейшей политике.
Publicly, in spite of the fact that publicly Russian authorities pretend or declare that they don't care what the West is saying about their actions, they are very sensitive to any criticism. In fact, any criticism from the West or of their actions against human rights and specifically LGBT rights. Therefore, it is, in our opinion, very important to continue that criticism and the pressure on the Russian government.
Второй вопрос касался как раз того, стоит ли говорить отдельно о правах ЛГБТ или говорить в целом о правах, о нарушениях прав человека. Но мне кажется, что такой вопрос, такой проблемы нет, потому что права человека не всегда конкретны, и нужно говорить конкретно, в том числе с российскими властями, о нарушениях.
I think, you know, the other question was about whether it is more effective to talk about human rights as a whole or specifically about different types of human rights. And I think we should always talk specifically about various human rights and their violations.
Сегодня предметом атаки со стороны властей и со стороны праворадикальных групп в России стало, по сути дела, всего три группы, их не так много. Это ЛГБТ, это мигранты и это гражданские активисты, то есть люди, которые имеют наглость иметь свое мнение.
In fact, today in Russia, the main victims and objects of attacks by the government are three groups. One is LGBT, the other is civic society leaders, and then migrants, migrant workers, which are, in effect, ethnic minorities from the surrounding countries, and the leaders of civic society who have got to speak publicly.
Да, и третий вопрос по поводу применения закона о пропаганде, он пока не применяется. Он предусматривает, так скажем, заключение, арест только для иностранцев, как это ни странно. Да, для россиян он, так сказать, арест не предусмотрен.
At this point, the law on gay propaganda does not envision any prison terms for Russians. It's only directed against the foreigners.
Дело в том, что в России очень многие законы вообще принимаются не для того, чтобы их применять, а в пропагандистских целях.
Many laws that are passed in Russia are not passed in order to enforce them, but to use them as propaganda.
И в этом смысле закон о запрете гей-пропаганды уже свое дело сделал. То есть вот та гомофобная истерия, которую власти хотели раскрутить, они ее уже раскрутили.
So in this respect, the law on anti-gay propaganda has achieved its goals. The hysteria that the authorities were trying to incite within this Russian society has been actually effectively incited.
И еще, поскольку спрашивали, как применяется этот закон, о механизме его применения, наказание предусмотрено административным кодексом, то есть решение принимают мировые судьи, это низшие, самая низкая судебная инстанция.
As far as the mechanism of enforcing this law is concerned, answering that question, it is in the jurisdiction of the lowest legal level of the legal system.
Но мы уже сталкивались неоднократно с ситуациями, когда полиция, так сказать, без всякого судебного решения, например, арестовывала активистов за проведение каких-то акций, запрещали проводить мероприятия, задерживали людей, ссылаясь на этот закон, но потом эти дела в суд не попадали.
But we've had many instances of police arresting people for organizing various events, but they were never brought to the court, those arrests.
То есть этот закон, он успешно используется и для внесудебного давления на гражданских активистов.
So this, in other words, this law is used for exerting pressure on the civil activists outside of the court.
This is a difficult question. I was thinking about it now, and like what I thought is that sometimes doing some sort of activism is really not about strategy that much, but as for affordability too. So it's interesting if we can afford forming these coalitions at the moment or not. Like the way I see it, I think that some issues need to be emphasized separately and specifically in broader human rights context. And simultaneously, coalitions with other minorities should be built. And I don't see this as mutually exclusive things. I think these processes go hand in hand together. So, like, in terms of strategy, I pretty much agree that it's important, on the one hand, to advocate for specific causes, on the other hand, to, you know, have cooperation with the others. Now, what happens in reality is that it's very difficult. Because, like, looking at Georgia, for example, after May 17, so after sexual minorities, that's how they call it, were eliminated, the threat to the country, you know, they fought them back. The new threat emerged, which are Muslim minorities. And people started to, you know, attack Muslims in the region. So these are very connected. But now then we have a problem because we really don't have any civil active activist sort of minority groups in Georgia, neither in other countries when I was looking at it, when I was listening to the presentations before, because we've been together for 2 weeks. So these countries are not like, these countries are not used to activist sort of lifestyle or like people advocating, social groups advocating for their rights. So what happens is that when there is an attack on Muslim population in a village, we go out and make a protest. Or we go to the officials and say that they have to do something. It's still, you know, us and few broader human rights defenders who do one and the same job. So the alliances that are possible are built. We're trying to reach out more. But it's also very difficult, especially with the religious minorities, because they don't really want to support gay rights. And like, we also had this conference, UNDP organized, great, My Situation of Minorities in Georgia. The first part was about religion, other second part was about LGBT. And everybody demonstratively left for after lunch, you know, everybody. And then they said why left. So it's a long process. I see it as an important strategic goal, but it's not like here I decide and the next day I do it. It is important. We try to do it. It's difficult. Thank you.
We'll take a few more questions. I think Jeff had a question. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Tushar, and I'm from the Human Rights Campaign. My question goes out to Igor. Well, apart from the fact that, of course, LGBT rights activists who've been protesting, they've been beaten up and they've been assaulted and everything. What is the government's what is their status? What are their comments on the videos that are emerging every other day of young people getting beaten up? Because I don't think there's any law that says that a person can be beaten up because they're gay, because these kids are definitely not doing anything to propaganda. So has the government come out with a statement, or is there anything being done for such hate crimes right now? Like, even in terms of just someone being beaten up, irrespective of their sexuality?
We'll take a few more, yeah.
Hi, my name's Wade. I'm from the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights here in D.C. Our work is a lot more focused on anti-gay legislation and homophobic rhetoric and violence in sub-Saharan Africa. And so I was wondering if maybe you could speak to a little bit of the trends that we see there, and that there's different levels of homophobia. There's the zealots, who are very anti-gay and fear-based, but there's also this level of political homophobia where in Uganda, for example, politicians know that they'll rise in popularity if they start spewing homophobic rhetoric. And in a very divisive political environment in a place like Uganda, they use the anti-gay legislation as a way to rally religious leaders and traditional leaders and different political factions around one common cause. So I was wondering if you could speak a little bit to the level of political homophobia that's going on in each of your contexts. Thanks.
Hello, Jeff Goldstein, also from the Open Society Foundations. Over the course of my lifetime, public attitudes towards homosexuals in the United States have changed radically. So looking beyond today's issues with legislation, can you talk a little bit about the road forward you see in terms of how you go about trying to change popular attitudes in each of your countries? Are there any tactics or strategies that have been employed in other countries like the United States that you think might work in your countries? In general, how do we get beyond the current situation?
Hi, my name is Katya Kumkova. I work for the website eurasianet.org, which is based here in New York at OSF. And I had a question for Anna, or actually two questions. You said that some of the most radical comments that have come out since May 17th have sort of died down under international pressure. And I'm wondering what that looked like. What kind of international pressure works in Georgia, and what kind has worked? And then my second question was actually about what you said about the animosity between Georgia and Russia, and how if Russia is doing something, Georgia doesn't want to do it. That seems kind of like an obvious point in this situation, and I'm wondering why that didn't catch on almost quicker. You know, in other words, is the Russian situation just not really getting as much attention, or is this something that only seems obvious to us here and not necessarily to people on the ground? Thank you.
Я сначала скажу по поводу коалиции, потому что я не ответил на этот вопрос относительно России.
I will first say about a few words about the coalition's issue, because I haven't so far tackled this problem in Russia.
Важное отличие ситуации в России от ситуации в США, например, заключается в том, что у нас невозможно такие же коалиции между разными меньшинствами, разными идентичностями, расовыми, религиозными, сексуальными.
The difference between Russia and US regarding those coalitions is that in Russia those coalitions are not possible. Coalitions between various sexual orientation groups.
Нет, невозможно коалиции между расовыми меньшинствами, этническими, религиозными и сексуальными.
The coalitions between racial, ethnic, religious and sexual groups are not really possible in Russia.
Потому что эти меньшинства достаточно замкнуты на себе, и чаще всего как раз бывает наоборот, что, то есть, скажем, пытаясь заручиться поддержкой со стороны властей, там те же этнические меньшинства или религиозные меньшинства, представители каких-то не господствующих церквей в России, они очень активно проявляют свою гомофобию для того, чтобы сказать власти, мы с вами, вот мы здесь, так скажем, полностью за вас, и не надо нас преследовать.
One of the reasons is that those small minorities, both especially it concerns the religious minorities, when they are trying to obtain or gain support from the government, they will say, "We are with you," and they will display an increased homophobic behavior to stress that they are with the government and they are trying to get their support and be on their side.
Но в России очень хорошо работают коалиции, созданные на идеологической или политической основе.
There are some coalitions that work very well and they are based on ideological or political basis.
Например, коалиции правозащитных организаций, вообще людей, которые разделяют правозащитную идеологию.
For example, coalitions of human rights defenders, people that defend human rights and share that ideology.
Мы за последние несколько лет провели определенную работу в этом направлении, поэтому сейчас мы имеем поддержку всех правозащитных организаций и вообще правозащитного сообщества в широком смысле.
In the last few years, we've done a lot of work toward that goal, and at this point, we basically have support from all human rights organizations and the human rights community in our country.
Нас поддерживают прогрессивные журналисты, которые тоже, они вот так достаточно оппозиционно настроены к власти, и, так скажем, поскольку они критикуют любые действия власти, то они поддерживают и нас тоже.
We are also getting a lot of support from the progressive journalists who actually are criticizing anything that the authorities are doing, therefore they will criticize also what they do toward us, against us, and thus we have their support.
Оппозиционные партии начинают поддерживать нас, когда их рейтинг популярности снижается ниже 3%. Эту закономерность уже заметил.
And I've noticed also the rule that the opposition parties will support us whenever the rating of their political strength goes under 3%. And I've noticed that.
Что касается реакции полиции на нападение, на те видео, которые ужасные видео, которые появились в интернете, я сначала хочу на этот вопрос ответить.
Yes, as far as the reactions, response, or the lack of it of the police to the video of beatings of of LGBT activists or LGBT community members?
Реакция бывает очень разной. То есть нам могут, например, говорить, что мы ведем проверку, а потом эта проверка ничем не заканчивается.
So the responses are various. For example, we hear that they are doing their investigation into the matter, and then it turns out that it doesn't bring any results.
Или мы получаем ответ, что не удалось установить виновных. То есть кто кого там бил, непонятно. Да? Хотя есть видео, и несложно. Мы иногда даже имена знаем тех людей, которые бьют, но вот полиция не может их установить.
And the other type of answer is that we are unable to establish the perpetrators, even though it is absolutely clear who's beating whom from those videos, and very often we are able to supply names of the people that launched the attack against gay people.
Ну и самая циничная реакция, с которой тоже нередко, к сожалению, приходится сталкиваться, заключается в том, что вы сами виноваты, вы провоцируете. Вот вы своими митингами и своей пропагандой гомосексуализма, вы провоцируете эти нападения, а люди просто возмущаются и вас бьют. Вот. Так что не провоцируйте, не выходите, и все будет в порядке.
And the most cynical response, type of response that we get is that we are ourselves to blame because we are provoking people and the people are indignant. And so if you stay at home and you don't provoke anybody, nothing will happen. You'll be safe.
И был вопрос по поводу политической гомофобии. Да, конечно, вот из, я думаю, что из того, что я уже тут рассказывал, понятно, что это политическая гомофобия. Это не ответ на рост каких-то гомофобных настроений населения. Это, наоборот, провоцирование этих настроений в политических целях, безусловно.
And of course, there was a question about political homophobia, and of course, there is political homophobia, which is not the response to homophobia that is still exists within Russian society. On the contrary, it's the way, it's a tool to incite more homophobic acts from those parts of society that already are homophobic.
И даже церковь, которая является одним из основных проводников, так сказать, этих гомофобных настроений, гомофобной пропаганды, она является лишь исполнителем политического заказа. Да? Русская православная церковь, она исторически такова, что она никогда ничего не сделает такого, что противоречило бы позиции официальных властей. Это всегда было так.
And the Russian church, that is kind of a leader in those, in homophobic propaganda, in this spreading homophobic propaganda, they do it only as the political, as answering to the political order from the government, because historically the church was always dependent on the government and never did anything that was contradictory to the official line of the Russian government.
And for Ukraine, public opinion and changing public opinion, I think it's the main point, because our political homophobia is respond to public opinion, because our politic. So for our politic, very important understand that that the people like they want to be liked, and соответствие вот этим гомофобным представлениям, гомофобным настроениям. According to the homophobic sentences. Sentiments among society, they just оправдывают свое существование.
They justify their existence.
Yes, they justify their existence. So it's why it's so important to work with public opinion. Two words about strategy. For us, the most important things is global ignorance among general population. Our people just don't understand some very simple things like democracy,
like human rights. They just cannot understand what is Europe, what is Europe values, and something like this. And when we speak about public opinion, I think we should start from the very beginning, which we should understand, we should explain for our people the very simple things as I told before. And in this case, we have not very good situation, because in United States was some past of fighting for some right before. In Ukraine and in our post-Soviet Union country, we have no such experience. And sometimes it seems to me that LGBT community in Ukraine, it's first ever community that began to fight for their right. So informational campaign. Yes, one moment. I wrote a lot of. And also, if we speak about public opinion, of course, public and general population should, LGBT community should be shown for general population, and it's possible only if we will have some community. In Ukraine, we don't have community. We have just several representative of gay or lesbians or something like this. And for changing public opinion, it's crucial is also provide some community building. Okay, thank you.
The first thing was what sort of international pressure works for the government, and before May 17 and after May 17, I think the pressure that worked was attention and was like really personal communication of the representatives of the government with the diplomatic corps. Like missions, different diplomatic missions in the countries, and that the messages were very clear, and like many of those cooperation or communication happened behind our backs even, so I don't really know. There was no such big sort of campaigning internationally that would lead to the pressure, but I think there was a lot of internal pressure, which I didn't myself observe that well, but I think that worked, because like the messages we were getting, you know, softer and softer and nicer slowly. So I think that's one thing. The other thing is that after May 17, for example, Thomas Hammerberg visited Georgia. He had meetings with us, with the government representatives. We suggested who were the friendly ones, who were, you know, not so friendly ones. So I think, like, working internally.
Sorry, just so Thomas Hammerberg is the Council of Europe Commissioner for Human Rights, for those who don't know.
So, yeah. So I think the like direct pressure on the ones who make decisions is something that's very important. I think international, like broader campaigning could help too, but I'm not quite sure, because with the campaigning, the messages go to the people too, like regular people, the voters, then politicians become more cautious, I think. I think like one-to-one sort of pressure is very supportive, like very helpful. That's one thing. And as for the other thing, is it not obvious for Georgia that what happens in Russia shouldn't be duplicated? It's absolutely no. No, like if it is spelled out that this is what happened in Russia, we shouldn't duplicate it because that then it would be clear. But people don't know. So it's either that they, you know, Georgian news don't cover that much of Russian news. That's why people don't know. It's either LGBT issues in general is not covered by mainstream media. That's why people don't know. But like people do not know. And anybody who uses and abuses Russian produced arguments, they of course don't say that this is what happened in Russia and now let's do it again. They say it is their own finding. Like we have a politician with a naive face and she's like, so I'm not against anybody, but what about, you know, like it's a general rhetoric with this like very, as if you discovered it the first time now, you know, so. No, people don't know that this is what happened in Russia and we shouldn't do it. Absolutely not. However, on the other hand, the scary tendency there is that church is openly starting already to use, like, to explicitly lean towards Russia, to explicitly say that Russia is actually good. And if that process goes really fast, then I don't know where we will be. Okay, thank you.
Thanks to everybody who came for the event, and thanks very much to the panelists who shared their stories and this one.